This is an ABC podcast.
Here we come, walking down the street.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is the Conversation Hour.
Welcome to the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and ABC Radio Victoria. Why would we play that? Why would we be doing that? I'll tell you why. There's a very good reason. Two of the monkeys are going to be in this very studio imminently, and we're pretty excited about it. Yes, they are coming in. Mike Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz will both be in the studio soon. The Monkees present the Mike and Mickey Show at the Palais Theatre coming up on Saturday, the 15th of June. They'll join us and we'll hear more of their music, let's hope. Also in the studio with us very soon here on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria is Petra Hayden, singer and violinist. Excited about that too, but let's just cut to the chase, really, because my co-host is looking at me intensely. Rebecca Barnard is here. You know Rebecca, singer-songwriter, Rebecca's Empire fame, and her latest album, Music for Listening and Relaxation. She doesn't want to talk about that at all. She wants to talk about her puppy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Isn't it funny how quickly we dump the things that we've been passionate about for years when we have a new puppy?
Well, it's incredible. It's like having a new baby.
No, it's much more work than that.
It's sort of, well, is it? I don't know. I know is that at 4 o'clock this morning, I had this little puppy whining and wanting to jump on my head. But, you know, so cute. It's very hard to, you can't get mad with them or anything. So sweet. He is so sweet. It's just ridiculous.
It's a visual thing. You've got to see this puppy.
Yeah.
Why did you get a puppy?
Well, I have had a dog pretty much all my life, and for the last 20 years they've all been rescue dogs. And I was looking for, I've got a 10-year-old little blind dog called Billy, and I thought, now's the time, if we're going to get a puppy, now's the time while we've got the matriarch, you know, who can sort of smack him around the chops if he needs a bit of discipline.
Yeah, a little help.
A little help, yeah. And so I've been looking for a small dog, and it's a good story really in a way. I've been looking for 2 years, and they get snapped up so quickly from the Lost Dogs Home, the RSPCA, which is really good news. And then I saw this puppy on the in the Trading Post, and I thought, damn it, let's do it. And my son really wanted it. He's never grown up with a puppy, and I thought it'd be good for him to have to clean up.
From scratch. It's a different experience, isn't it? The getting a dog that's already older to a brand new dog that has lots of needs.
Yeah, boy.
So you got basically hassled like I did.
I did.
Yeah, let's just be honest about it.
And
you caved like I did.
I'm shocked. He's on the bed. Like, I'm a real softie. I know. Well, I felt sorry for him. He was dragged away from his mother.
Yeah, that's what they do.
I know. And he's just so little, and he's feisty and he's sweet. And, you know, I don't mind. I'm starting bad habits early.
I'm looking at you very judgmentally, aren't I?
Yeah.
I'm in a different situation. I have a family trying to break me at the moment. For all of this sort of in the bedrooms behaviour. No, not me. Won't be broken. I was already broken on getting the dog. I'm like, we're not, that was the main breakage point.
Right.
You've done that.
Just getting
You've
the,
won the main battle.
Yeah.
Don't try and win the next war.
Right.
Right?
So where is it?
In the kitchen, inside, little cavoodle, little girl Bindi. Downstairs is good.
Right.
It's indoors, it's warm, it's lovely. It's not the bedrooms, it's not the beds.
No,
it's boundaries, people.
Yes, I know. I've never been good with boundaries, ever.
But obviously it's working for you because you look pretty happy this morning.
Well, we've only had him 5 days. So
it's pretty fresh.
It's very fresh.
So have you had the sort of wheeze and poos in random places, including your bedroom?
No, you know what? Not such random places. Usually the same place.
Oh, smart dog.
Yeah, he is smart. He's very sweet. And, you know, there's something about a puppy that is reminding me to live in the moment. You know what I mean? It's actually really good for you. It's really good for you because they're just so full of joy. So 4 o'clock in the morning, this morning.
That's an interesting time to be full of joy, though.
I know. Well, if anything can make you...
Did you feel joy when the puppy showed joy?
I felt slight joy.
Only a little bit of joy at that time.
Well, I felt love. Let's say I felt love. I didn't feel overly joyous. And I ignored him. I just ignored him and he went back to sleep. So there you go. But it's really, you know, it's amazing. Dogs are good for everything. They're good for your blood pressure. They're good for your soul. They're good for your sense of humour. They're funny.
And they get you out there.
They get you out there. They
so
make
if you're
you
feeling
exercise.
All grumpy and you don't feel like moving, you've got no choice unless you want to neglect your dog. And no one wants to do that.
No.
Well, someone might.
Well, some
you
people
shouldn't.
Do. You can't imagine, can you?
You can't imagine.
No. You just
especially
cannot.
When they're that cute.
Yeah, and innocent. And all they want to do is make us happy. Not at this age, not when they're this little. But, you know, as they get older, dogs.
Are you going to do puppy school?
I never have. I mean, I've had puppies before, but not for a long time. And I don't know. Depends how early you have to get up on a Saturday morning to get there.
You can get some evening puppy school classes. We
can
did
you?
Evening classes.
Yeah, I could do that.
You could.
Because if I'm gigging on a Friday night, I don't want to get up and take
you,
a
You don't need
puppy
to add that in, do you?
Not really. I'm over those days.
Do you think the puppy come along to a gig?
Maybe one day, definitely an outdoor gig.
An outdoor gig. If you could train the puppy right, although it doesn't look like you're working too hard on that. Sorry. That was a low blow,
you
wasn't
wait.
It?
I'm going to bring him in one day and he'll be so obedient.
And it's really, look, I'm not surprised here. We're already getting pictures on the text line of other people's puppies, which is what happens. Puppies, as I say, dogs bring us together.
They do.
I've been a nicer person since I've had a dog.
Have you?
I'm sure I have. I'm not sure, actually. But although I do find the, like I've always had kids that sleep in, good kids that just don't bother us much.
Yeah, right.
Dog, not such a fan of that.
You're hardcore. I've got kids that don't bother me much.
Yeah, well, I don't want them to bother me early in the morning.
In
I think that's
kitchen.
A fundamental
no,
issue.
No, that is. It is.
But it's... the dog doesn't feel as enthusiastic about that. Commitment that the children have had.
Really?
So that's a struggle, getting up early for a dog.
I know.
Cute, but maybe not that cute always.
But guess what? It won't last all that long. They're not. How old's yours?
Mine's 5 months, nearly 6 months.
Yeah, it's a baby. You wait another 6 months.
I'll bring Bindi over to your house at 4 a.m. See how you go with that. You can put them together. You can have the old one looking after them all.
That's the perfect scenario,
that's what
really.
They want, isn't it?
Yeah. They just want, they're pack animals, you know, and they just want to be together.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and ABC Radio Victoria, my co-host today, Rebecca Barnard, you can hear her there. She's got a new album actually called Music for Listening and Relaxation.
It's not new. No, it's actually been out for 2 years now.
Oh, well, and, it says new here. So we've
I think
said
it's an
new.
Old press release. Okay, well, let's pretend it is. Well, yeah, and it's available on.
Why did you call it Music for Listening and Relaxation?
It's that I found a Reader's Digest box set in a op shop in Katoomba in the Blue Mountains. It had this beautiful cover with I think it's a crocus, a yellow crocus, which is a flower against a bright gothic blue background, and it said Music for Listening and Relaxation, and it just stuck with me. And you know, on reflection, I should have not had the relaxation in it, because it's people are expecting dolphins and whales.
Are they expecting sort of massage parlor music?
A bit new age, yeah. Massage parlor.
That's what they're called in where I hang out.
Yeah, it's funny,
isn't it?
It says,
you know, those neon lights that go up.
Yeah.
Parlour.
Ah. But are they...
Not in your
are
not
they
in your
real
neck of the
massage? Are they...
I don't know. I don't,
brothels
I don't
or
go in.
Right.
I don't, which is probably good if you're going to alarm me the way you just have.
Isn't that funny? Because I was talking to someone the other day about a young person that I mentor about performance anxiety, and I typed in performance anxiety and all this stuff starts coming up with Viagra and, you know, how to make your lover last 50 hours.
And you're like,
hours.
Not that kind of performance
and
anxiety.
The young person said to me, why did you put that in? I said, well, that's what it is. And she said, no, stage fright. You have to call it stage fright now. And it just magnified how, you know, words have changed so much over the last, say, 5 years. You know, everything's labelled and everything has its proper name. Who would have thought?
And how smutty the internet is too.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you know.
I know. I was thinking, you
know. Good old stage fright. We have to stick to that. Probably means something else by the time this show
ends.
Yeah,
it will. It'll mean, yeah.
I don't want to know. I don't think we can handle this conversation. Hey, we're going to have the Monkees in here soon.
I know.
And you're a massive fan.
Do you know, I watched it. Well, I don't think it was on every night. Maybe it was on once a week. I can't remember. But, yeah, I was a huge, huge fan. I used to sing harmonies along with them. And funnily enough, my dad, being a musician, would drive into the Southern Cross every night to work in the Mayfair room. And they'd built this modern, we're talking 1967, this hotel on the corner of Burke Road and Cotham Road, Burke Road, Cotham Road. And it was quite groovy 70s, and I convinced myself that that is where the Monkees would be staying when they came to Melbourne, because they did come to Melbourne. I told everyone at school, I know where they're staying. I know exactly.
Without any information.
No, it's because it looked modern and groovy, and I thought, well, of course they'd
Why
stay there.
They? It's a good place to go.
It's so clear in my head, and it's still there, this rundown old sort of 70s brick building. But I'm sure they were. They were probably staying at the Southern Cross, actually.
This is like my experience when Wham came to Melbourne, and I was very, very small, but I knew they'd stayed at the Hilton, right?
Yeah.
And whenever I stopped at Jolimont and looked at the Hilton, all I thought about was George Michael Forth. Seriously, till today, I cannot look at the Hilton and
not
be mesmerised by the memory of Wham in the 1980s.
Wow.
They're still there for me.
Did you see them?
No.
Oh.
No, it was, like, as I say, tiny. Wasn't allowed
Poor
to have
George
too much fun.
Michael.
Oh, look, that's a whole other conversation now, which we should have while I'm here. A lot of words for that. If you're just tuning in, this is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and ABC Radio Victoria. Rebecca Barnard is actually gigging, of course, in Castlemaine. Tell us about your show.
No, I'm not.
Don't you?
No, that's funny. That's funny. I got that email and it's a really old press release. But
I'd love to organise a gig for you in Castlemaine.
I will be.
Because I would come.
You wouldn't. Come on, I'm going to hold you to that. I do play in Castlemaine a lot at the Tap Room, which is this beautiful little brewery that is owned by Doug Falconer, who was the drummer in Hunters and Collectors, and he's set up this magnificent place. Castlemaine's beautiful. But I am tonight, I have my sing-along at the Caravan Music Club. I've been doing it for 10 years, the first Wednesday of every month. It is a sing-along. And we get 200 people and we all sing together. Billy Miller and I play guitars and we have a big screen, so it's like live karaoke. And one of the biggest hits we do is I'm a Believer.
Oh.
Everyone goes off.
Well, before we bring in our Monkees, two of the Monkees about to enter the studio, let's hear a track from them. This is Last Train to Clarksville by the Monkees. Last train to
Clarksville. Yep.
Who performs that song?
Me.
You?
Yep. That's me singing. And you know that bit in the middle that goes did. There was words to that. And at that time we were filming the TV show 10 to hours a day, and then going in the studio at night, wow, recording songs. And I remember that going in to record that song, and there was words to that part in the middle bit. And I got to that part, and it was midnight, and I'd already been up for like 16 hours. And I said to Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart, I tried to sing it. I don't remember what the words were. Like, I'm going to the station, and I said, I can't do that. I'm sorry, it's midnight. I can't do it. And so Tommy Boyce says, well, just go diddle.
Really?
And it works. I'm so,
it really
true story,
works.
True story, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it works. You never know.
In the studio are two of the Monkees, Mike Nesmith and also Mickey Dolenz. They are playing at the Palais Theatre. The Monkees present the Mike and Mickey show. Look, I've got to put this to you. The press release says this might be the last Monkees performance. Is this just to alarm us all and get everyone there?
You know, who are you asking? Who are you asking?
I'll start with you.
Okay. I've learned never to say never. Because over the decades, it always seems to work out that way. I do the best I can. I do the best show I can. And the Monkees was a very unusual sort of a situation in the sense that after the show went off the air, there was no Monkees. There was no Monkee office or management or group or you know, everybody just went their separate ways as the cast of a television show or a cast of, say, a West End musical.
Thousands of lawyers suing each other.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a messy end, was it?
I don't know that it was messy. I mean, there wasn't any...
Well, not from my point of view, no.
Oh,
it
cool.
Was, but
okay.
We were all fairly calm. We made our money. We were sitting quiet to see if the lawyers would kill each other, hoping against hope.
The Monkees, you know, was a TV show like Glee.
Yeah.
You know the show
Glee?
Yeah. Like Glee. That's how I had it wrong. I thought it was a show about doctors and hospitals and stuff.
I'm so relieved that you found a contemporary example so that some young people might go, oh, yeah, like Glee.
Like it was...
Is that an access
years
point
ago,
given everyone?
It was 60 years ago. I mean, Glee is a TV show about an imaginary Glee club.
Wait a minute. Imaginary?
Yeah. But they can actually do it. They can sing and act and dance, and they can actually and they go and perform. If I'm not mistaken, they've gone out the cast.
Mm. Have you watched Glee?
I did a couple of times, but they perform live, or did I think at some point. The Monkees was much more like musical theater to my mind on television, like a Marx Brothers half hour little Marx Brothers musical. And in fact, it was John Lennon. Oh, did I drop that name? Oh, sorry. Who I remember saying, I like the Monkees, I like the Marx Brothers. And that was very accurate.
Oh, that's funny.
That was very accurate, you know. And if you look at the whole Monkee picture as musical theater on television, again, this is just my point of view, the whole thing makes a lot more sense.
It was such a great show. It was such fun for us. Sitting there, I was like 8 years old, and I was obsessed. I was absolutely obsessed.
That was the age.
Yeah.
Yep. Eight.
Was it?
Yeah. Mom, come look at this. Who are these people?
Well, it's funny because I think it's when you're around eight, as a girl anyway, that's when you start to get crushes.
Yeah.
You know?
And here is the declaration. Please keep continuing.
Well,
that was the demographic. It was age 10.
Isn't that interesting?
And who was your crush on, Rebecca?
Well, I loved you all. But I love you all like my own.
You're a Davy girl.
No, I was a Peter Tork girl.
Oh, that's interesting, great.
I've got
wonderful.
I've always had a thing for bass players, to my detriment. But but that's didn't was it Peter Tork who said if you all swapped instruments, the perfect band would not that you weren't a perfect band. Mike would have been on bass. You would have been the front guy, singer. Davy would have been on drums. He was a good drummer, wasn't he?
Yeah, he could play. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're an incredible. You're just incredible. Full stop. Like, I remember seeing you in Circus Boy.
Oh boy,
your little cute face.
Oh boy,
he could really play then.
Well, you could. Like, it's just. I know I'm sort of digressing, but it's. You were born to do
actually.
This.
I have some prenatal work coming out on ultrasound. I've been in the business a long time.
So it's on computer. We can watch you tapping away.
You've got to work hard to make it out because a lot of gurgles and water.
And you're returning to the Palais. I think it was 1977 you played it.
Really? Did I?
Oh,
Mike did.
Hand up, Mike. Tell me more. You're returning, Mike.
Thank you.
Mike. Do you remember that gig?
Do I remember it? I remember it like a freckle. I mean, it's never gone away. With the album itself is
sometimes freckles fade.
Sometimes. Not in this case, however.
Was that when Rio was number one?
I think it was just prior to that. It was a good band. It was a 5-piece band, but the more salient, the original record is now out on vinyl. It's a big yellow vinyl record.
That's very groovy.
Don't know about that, but I'll give it to you. You know, just in case we get in court. But the then it's coming out again.
Wow.
Who's putting it out, Andrew? Do you know, or do you know?
I don't think even Andrew calling out to your manager there.
We're not really at a dining table
fabulous. No, I like how you did that. You yelled out across the restaurant. Who's putting that one out?
Does
it make you laugh that it's coming out in vinyl again? The way things have come full circle.
Well, it did make me laugh a bit, but it's just you know, people have been at it for a long time trying to get it to come out again. It's okay. I mean, it's okay.
That's a good record. That's great.
But the thing it was really okay was the Palais.
Mm. Yeah.
Palais has this, you know, walls that talk.
Yeah, totally.
So what's your set list like?
To coming up?
Yep. You know, we always do the hits. I've always, you know, pushed very hard to make sure that the audience gets what they've come for. And I know that because I've been a fan of bands. I remember in England, I went to see the Everly Brothers when they first got back together. And I remember I wasn't singing or acting. I was producing and directing television shows. And I remember telling my wife, I hope they do Wake Up Little Susie, and I hope they do, you know, all those songs. And sure enough, they did. And I was standing up there, 6-row center, you know, like everybody else, standing up. Well, we weren't doing the cigarette lighter thing at the time. You
know? Now people do it with their mobile phones.
I'm crying, wake up, little Susie. And I remember thinking at the time, if I ever go back and they ask me to sing these songs again, the monkey songs, I'm going to make sure they get what they came for. And once you give them that and they know they're going to get it, then you can kind of do all kinds of stuff. In this particular set, I'm especially excited to be doing songs with Nez. We've done songs of Nez over the years, Peter Tork and Davey and I, when Nez wasn't around. But to do them with him, again, like we did originally, the original harmonies, because we had this blend.
Oh, you sure
did. We always had this blend.
Amazing.
I call it Everly Monkeys. And that's been especially a great thrill for me.
Got to ask you this one. We're getting lots of texts with questions, and I think some of them deserve to be asked. Kath from Mornington asks, she remembers your movie Head.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone wants to know what Frank Zappa was like.
I can't say I knew him extremely well. I think Nez probably knew him better than I did. You're the one that got him on the show, right?
I think so. I mean, you know, all that.
We'll take the credit. He's
production.
Just
giving to yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was the one. That was me.
What a deal.
I thought it up out of whole cloth, and sure enough, here comes Frank walking down the street.
You know, he got it. He was, I'm not sure how big a
well,
fan
wait,
he
wait
was.
Wait a minute, not so fast. I'm not sure he got it. I think he was spritzing Davey the whole time he was there. Don't you remember how he used to, Davey, and Davey would go completely go with,
Oh, poor Davey.
Well, I don't know.
No.
I'm not sure.
No. Not so fast.
Okay.
Davey could take care of himself.
Well, yeah, little Manchester
Who got
boy.
Him on the show with you as him and him as you?
Bert.
That was Bert. Okay.
Oh, no. That idea was Frank's.
That was Frank's.
He said, I would never do the monkey show unless I could play you. And I said, well, you know, Frank, I can pull that off. It's a movie. It's a movie show. You can dress up like me, and I'll dress up like you.
I think he got it. I think he got the monkey thing.
I'm sure he did.
You know,
yeah.
Like others got it. I think the Beatles, I think John, for instance, got it. Yeah. What it was before I even maybe got it. But I'll tell you, after the monkeys, post-monkeys, after the show went off the air, you'd left already. Peter had left. And Frank, who lived down the street, called me up and he said, Mickey, I want you to be the drummer for the Mothers of Invention.
Whoa.
And I was like, I'll never forget the phone call. And he said, Frank, you know, I know how to play the monkey stuff and I can play that okay. But he said, I want you to be the, he was starting the new Mothers. And he said, but you got to get out of your recording contract. And I called Lester Sill and I said, Frank Zappa has asked me to be the drummer for the Mothers of Invention. And, but I got to get out of my contract. And he said, no way. And I was like, whew.
Wow.
Yeah. Thank goodness. Because, I mean, if you listen to Zappa stuff, it's just like, crazy stuff.
Yeah.
There's 13/7 time, and yeah. I never would have been able to cut that gig, but I always saw him. I'd bump into him, and I just think he got it. I'm not sure he watched every episode and was like a fan, but he got. And you know who else got it was Andy Warhol.
So
I bumped into a couple of times. He got it. He got the joke. Timothy Leary. Got it. He wrote half a chapter in one of his books about it.
Really?
And because in 68, nothing like this had ever happened.
No.
Where life and reality and fantasy and imagination and stuff. And
did you know it would go off like it did?
No, you never know. You hope. You work hard and you do your best and you hope. But in the case of the monkeys, it started out with as this
you
TV
knew.
Show.
Nez knows.
But
you knew.
Well, I'd written. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, lest we forget, incredible songs.
Oh, yeah.
And you all had incredible voice, almost like siblings, you know, the tight harmonies and the hooks and the, like that.
No, diddle, diddle, diddle.
Oh, sorry, diddle, diddle, diddle.
Get your diddles right,
sorry.
Girl.
I'm really fascinated to, does it frustrate you sometimes? Like I know with you, Mike, you do so much more. I mean, you both do, but you as a philanthropist.
It's a funny trait of thought.
I know. Okay. You do.
I was doing my solo, I would say, like, I want to introduce a band. This is John Hobbs. He's playing bass. I actually, lead guitar or something like that, is Mr. Jack Welch. Now, you may not know Jack Welch, but Jack is the CEO of General Electric Corporation.
Wow.
And I got him to come play guitar on this particular thing. Crowd goes silent. Everybody, they're all going, is he good? Is this a joke? That's not really Jack Welch, is it really? Is it?
Can he play good?
No, he's a jerk. I'm kidding.
But that's
that never happened.
That's what I mean. Like you, I was reading about you. You're a philanthropist. Like you do incredible stuff. You get all these amazing people to come. You sit in a room with five amazing people and talk about how we can make the world a better place.
Well, I don't know. You're talking about the Council on Ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're the recipient of a gift of that size. The only thing I could think of was give it away.
So not everyone thinks to give it away,
you're
though.
Telling me. No, it's a cold, long, lonely road. I remember it well because I don't do it anymore to speak of. But
oh, don't you?
There's something about public money and public giving. My mother left me millions.
Now, let's get to the backstory. Not everyone would know it necessarily. Your mother did leave you a lot of money. No,
yeah.
Well, I only know a bit of it. It's your story, not mine.
She invented liquid paper, which was, at the time, a typing correction fluid. Mm. People now use it to paint out the errors on the TV screen. So, you know, after a while, you can't do it anymore.
I still use liquid paper. I love it.
I love it, too.
What do you use it for?
I still write.
Yeah?
A pen. I'm holding one right now. tell the listeners there's evidence here. I'm holding a pen.
Yeah.
I just love liquid paper. Anyway, so she
well, you, she turned she
you
turned
hold,
this
you got a whole
idea,
lot of money.
Yeah. She turned this idea into a multi-million dollar international corporation died and left me the corpus of her estate. So now the question is, what do you do? You don't ever have to work again. You don't ever have to take this guy's call anymore. I just pointed to Mickey. You don't ever, you know, you can tell them all to go jump in the lake if you want to, which I would never do.
No.
So it was, what do you want to do? And public giving was the answer to that for me. Now, I can't, that's as far as I can take it. I mean, there's deep philosophical points down in there, but I can't mine them. I know that, you know, it's a nice thing to do, and it makes a lot of people very, very happy. But over years, I attenuated that. And my mother was on her way to just handing out, you know, millions. Yeah.
Did she have a sort of science-y background? How did she come to do this?
Are you talking about public giving?
No, the liquid paper.
She's obsessed with the liquid paper, as am I.
Where'd you get the idea?
Yeah.
Is what everybody asks.
Yeah.
Well, the answer is I don't know.
Wasn't your idea.
Huh?
But did she have a...
well to ask?
Well said, no.
Did she have an academic background in anything?
No, I don't think... I'm not sure of a lot of things. I'm not sure I was a legitimate child. I'm not sure that my mother graduated high school. Okay. I'm not sure that she was married when she had me. She had me when she was, 17 years old.
Oh, wow.
See, so we were peers. But she was a very high-minded person.
Right.
Very high-minded. And she was familiar and easy with ideas, especially public good and generosity and so forth. She was a holy terror. You didn't want to cross her. But she had this largesse that she felt under some compunction to provide less fortunate. And she had done such a job. Now, I don't want to take away, she was surrounded by a cadre of male people who helped her run the company. But once she had amassed a fortune, she started buying art. And she bought an old post office in Dallas, Texas, and turned that into something. And somewhere around here, I don't think it was ever in it might have been in Melbourne. I can't remember. But it was someplace here in Australia that she put up another plant. She had five plants. She had Brussels. I'm going to say Australia because I can't remember the name of the – maybe a listener can call in. Mm. And Toronto and one other big city that were manufacturing centers. And she had them all over the world. And they were just, you know, they were plants that just generated money and service to people. But when the time came, she said, she called me up. She said, I want you to sit on the board of my foundations. And it just freaked me out. But I said yes instantly. I mean, it was, you know, it's your mother.
It is.
Yeah.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne. That is an incredible story, the liquid paper backstory there.
Yeah.
And ABC Radio Victoria, my co-host today, Rebecca Barnard, and our two guests, Mike Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz. They are, of course, two of the Monkees. And the Monkees present the Mike and Mickey Show is on at the Palais Theatre on Saturday the 15th of June. I know you know because many of you are texting in saying you're going to the show, you're excited about the show, even asking me, will there be merchandise? I don't know the answer.
Yes, there will be.
There you go. Now I know the answer. There will be merchandise. Our next guest, Petra Haden, is coming in. But let's hear a track before we get there. There Is a Dream by Petra Haden.
Like water in a stream, I keep flowing in a dream.
That was beautiful, Petra.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
What a beautiful song. Did you write it?
No. Actually, my dad wrote it, Charlie Haden, and my friend Jesse Harris wrote the words because I thought there should be words, and I don't know how to write words. It's not my forte. And so I asked Jesse to write them, and he said, okay, I'll have it for you in 2 days. And he just came.
Thank you. Voice.
And that track, of course, is "There Is a Dream" by Petra Hayden, who is our guest too in the conversation hour. That is the name of the song.
Yeah.
What is this? I can't write lyrics. Have you tried? How hard have you tried?
Well, here, quick. Rhyme something with orange. There's your problem right there.
I tried, and it just came out to be kind of gibberish. I used to.
I know what you mean.
There are so many songs that are full of gibberish. It would probably be a hit.
I'm really terrible. I don't know why. I love singing other people's lyrics. I just don't know. I can't explain why. I just don't know how to do it.
I've got a theory, Petra. There's so many incredible lyricists out there that often when you write words, you think, well, you know, this just can't compare to maybe. I'm just saying, deep down, that's how I feel a lot of the time.
Here's my anecdote. I just wrote a book, Self-Serving, and I got to the last line in the book, and I couldn't write it. And I thought, and I thought, and thought, and all of it was corny, all of it was old soap, not one thing worked. Finally, I called up my editor, and I said, I'm stuck. I don't know whether this is called a block, I don't know what this is, but I can't do it. He said, well, you have to, you're the writer. I said, well, Kevin, I can't. That's the reality of this. So I was saying basically the same thing you were saying. And I don't, maybe this is truth tell. So Kevin wrote the last line of the book.
Oh, wow.
Who did? The editor at Random House.
Wow.
He wrote the last line of the book. But I couldn't write it.
Wow.
And it's a great line. It's a great line. You'll have to buy the book, of course, and you can receive it from me. So I know what it is. It's not a block. It's like everything sounds stupid or something to me.
Like what do I write about?
You know, the space.
Love? I don't know. I just don't know what to think or write, you know.
You know how to sing, though, don't you?
Oh.
You're good at that.
No kidding.
You've nailed
Thank
that.
Thank you.
So if you're good at something, it's probably good to stick to it.
Yeah.
Just exactly what you've done.
And you've got beautiful... you're a triplet. I mean, that's incredible in itself.
You mean biologically?
Yes.
Yeah, you're one of three?
Three girls.
So we sang together our whole lives. So that was very helpful in learning harmony and you know, singing with a group.
There's a nascent theory that runs around about the genetic mix of voices. When you start singing together, it sounds different than anything else. There's a trio, I can't remember the name of them, of women who sing. You
Hayden
can just hear
sisters.
It.
Yes.
What did you say?
The Hayden sisters.
I think it was something like that. Oh, you mean that.
There's actually a term which I...
Oh, okay.
Sibling something.
Right. Blood harmony.
Blood harmony.
Yeah. The Leuven brothers.
Have you done some research into this?
Well, we're trying to figure out the name of our new... The Hayden triplets recorded a new record. And we're trying to figure out a name for it, and that was a potential...
Yeah. Blood harmony.
Blood harmony or
Hearts Harmony. That gets my vote.
Me too.
Cool.
But I'm not sure what it's going to be. It might be Hayden's songbook, because some of the songs are songs from my father and his family. They were in the Hayden family. They sang and played on the Hayden family radio show in Missouri. Mm. My dad sang harmony when he was three, you know, and they knew the Carter family. And
Yeah, blood harmony is a little bit maybe heavy metal.
A little heavy.
Heavy metal, a little bit.
You think it'll send the wrong signal, do you?
That was really great.
He's good at improvising because they made him do it on...
Taught us to do it.
Yeah.
Taught us to improvise. It was part of the...
Did you ever miss an episode?
Nah.
We had improv lessons.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they wanted that. They wanted that spontaneity. Again, very unusual for that
time
period. Never, ever had I been on a TV show where you were encouraged to improvise. You know, you read the lines from your script, and that was it.
Wow.
And they encouraged it. Very smart. Somebody made a real smart choice there.
It's very
Petra,
jazz.
There was no choice for you, was there, from such a musical family? It wasn't like
no
there was
choice.
Really... You weren't allowed to do anything else, were you? It was always going to be music.
I just was drawn to music from the start. I think it had a lot to do with watching my dad play and listening to movie sound. I loved movie soundtracks when I was a kid, like John Williams and... And I listened to so much music, and I would sing. I would have these songs in my head, and I couldn't get them out. And I just knew music was going to be the thing I was going to do for the rest of my life. And so I started playing violin, but then I quit violin after high school. Well, during high school, and then joined a rock band after high school and learned to play the violin again, I don't read music, so I just played by ear. And now I just continue to do that with everything I'm doing.
The gig on Friday night at the Jazz Lab, mm-hmm. great venue. You've played there before.
Yeah.
That's songs... by my father?
From my father.
I keep thinking... sorry, I don't mean to be impertinent, but did your father get a degree of celebrity or so? Would I have known him, Charlie Hayden? It rings a bell.
In the jazz world, yeah. He's.
What did he play?
He played upright bass, and he started playing with Ornette Coleman. And
oh, wait a minute. I know Charlie Hayden's work. Yeah. That was your father.
Well, he passed away.
Before?
In 2014.
Huh.
And we were just, you know, now I'm playing with Bill Frisell and all his, you know, friends that he...
That's a deep trough. I wandered into that Nashville trough in the Monkees in the 80s or 90s or something, and recorded, listened to the band and a bunch of stuff that was...
Mm-hmm.
And came from these guys. They were the Muscle Shoals guys.
Oh,
and it was that band. They were working with Aretha at the time, and so forth. And I got torpedoed into the group and learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's it like working with your father's contemporaries?
It's great. I mean, it's so much fun.
But you would have seen them so differently growing up, and
yeah,
now
like,
you're
like,
at their level. That's like, always a weird transition, right?
Yeah, like when he recorded Rambling Boy back in 2011, Pat Metheny, you know, a bunch of great musicians, Pat Metheny played on it, and Bruce Hornsby, and just amazing musicians, and I sang on the song that he was playing, and he's known that I've been a huge fan of his since I was a kid, and here I am standing next to Pat Metheny, and he's showing me the chart to Fields of Athenry. He's like, what do you think of this part? And I was like, it's great. Anything that you want, Pat.
it's like, that's how I feel, like sitting in a studio in Melbourne with Mike Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz.
We are going to have to
surreal.
Provide Rebecca Barnard with some medical attention at the end of this. She's rather excited.
When you were saying that, like that's the kind of thing that I love.
No, let's get it right. It's diddle, diddle, diddle.
Get it.
And I was in there like, what's the harmony to that?
Hey, I've got a question from Glenn that I need to put to you, Mike. What's the story behind Joanne?
Oh, the eternal question.
Yeah. Well, it has to be asked then. An eternal question needs to be repeated.
You may as well tell the truth and then it won't have
Come
to
on.
Be asked.
Yeah,
again.
But
you never, never,
ever
going
to think
truth.
To ask it again.
No, I made a vow to myself, never tell the truth about music.
Okay.
Just play it. It has its own truth. That sounds much more profound than
that's
it was.
True.
I think I was high as a kite when I came up with that. But whatever it was, whatever
sure, that's
it was,
never happened.
Joanne was a song that I wrote about and for Jack Nicholson, who was, at the time, a very tight friend. This is in the book, by the way. And he was coming over. We would sit around a bar I had at my house and, drink to oblivion. And he was, for my estimation, he's one of the great friends of all time. And he was hilarious to me. I thought he was funny. And he was dating a woman named Mimi Michu. You remember Mimi?
Yeah.
Gorgeous. And we all got to kiss her. No euphemism intended. That's in the movie. And she and Jack broke up. What? What
are you? No, I'm just thinking.
Hashtag me too.
I'm
keep
just
going.
Thinking the 60s. Woo.
Hashtag that's me all. Too. But please continue your story on Joanne.
He was over at the house, and I said, Jack, and he had broken up with Mimi, and he was, I don't want to put too heavy a word on it, but like morose. I mean, he was very, very sad. And I said, to my everlasting chagrin and embarrassment, I said, well, Jack, she's only a girl. Now, look, everybody just keep your seats.
It's all right.
Everybody thinks that we might be at a radio station, but we're not. We're at a restaurant. What did you think of the sound?
I need more salt. Keep going.
But that seemed to lift something from him. And so I, take it. It's yours. I don't think I meant it the way he took it.
Okay.
But it was like you can move on from this, what it is. But I thought, there is an idea for a song.
There you go. Wow.
So I just chased it down and tackled it and said, her name was Joanne. Why Joanne? Couldn't tell you.
Just
that's the songwriting
fit
thing.
Beautifully. Can you tell a little bit about someone that you sang with at a certain birthday party, Petra? Speaking of, life being just so incredible.
Well, this is where I met Megan Mullally, who I'm currently on tour with now. I was telling you that I met her at Yoko Ono's birthday party, and I went up on stage and sang with her, and I tried to sing a harmony. She was screaming like a mellow, like, ah, and I was like, ah, and we just kept singing, and at the time I was working with Sean Lennon and Yuka Honda and a lot of people, and so it was a really fun night. And
amazing.
And so afterwards, Megan said, "Yeah, wow, you sing great. Maybe you want to be in a band. You want to play in my band, Nancy and Beth."
Anyone who can sing a harmony to Yoko is brilliant.
How wild is the Yoko Ono party scene? Tell me about it.
I mean, it was dark. It was loud. It was fun. I mean, it was really fun. Lots of people were there. David Byrne and so many fun people. And yeah, it's kind of a blur.
Mullally is a shibboleth for this new movie. So, what's it named? Little Eyes or Little? Tell me what it is, Mel. Do you know the movie I'm talking about with Nicole Kidman and the lead person in it? And Mullally is a safe word. When one of them says to the other, Mullally, that means listen to me, say nothing. What?
Yeah, I don't remember the movie name, but I know what you're talking about.
It's out now. It's going now. Right? What's your name? What was the name of the movie? What was the name of the movie, Mel?
You're asking. It's throwing the other side of the restaurant again.
Yeah.
That's the other side of the restaurant.
That's the maitre
d'. Big Little Lies, something?
Yes, Big Little Lies.
Good. That is very good.
Oh, that's excellent.
That is very good.
Yeah, I love that movie. Have you seen it?
Isn't it a series?
But it's kind of like a
movie. Concert.
This is the conversation hour. Trying to get a word in here on ABC Radio Melbourne and ABC Radio Victoria. My co-host today, Rebecca Barnard, also Mike Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz. They're playing The Monkees Present, the Mike and Mickey Show, the Palais Theatre on Saturday, the 15th of June. Also with us, Petra Hayden, who is playing at the Jazz Lab. This Friday, the 7th of June, at 7 and at 9 p.m, two shows as part of the Melbourne International Jazz Festival. This has been the Conversation Hour.
On ABC Radio, this is the Conversation Hour.